hills, gazing at him as her heartbeat soars and his question hangs between them, full of possibility. Bed? Your bed? I'll show you to your room, he murmurs, but neither of them moves. They stare at each other, and Alessia can't decide whether she's relieved or disappointed. Perhaps more disappointed than relieved. She doesn't know. You're frowning, he whispers. Why? She remains mute, unable or unwilling to articulate what she's thinking or feeling. She is curious. She likes him, but she knows nothing about sex. No, he utters, as if talking to himself. Come on, I'll take you to your room. He collects her plastic bags from the kitchen counter, and she follows him up the staircase. At the top of the stairs is a brightly lit landing with two doors. Maxim opens the second one and switches on the light. The off-white room is spacious and airy, with a king-size bed against the far wall and a large window to one side. The linen is off-white too, but the bed is scattered with cushions that match the colors in the dramatic seascape that hangs above the bed. Maxim waves her inside and places her bags on a colorful embroidered bench. She approaches the bed. She stares at her reflection in the dark window. Maxim moves to stand behind her. Mirrored in the glass, he's tall, lean, and more than handsome. And she looks wan and scruffy beside him. In every way, they are not equals, and that's never been more apparent than at this moment. What does he see in me? I am only his cleaner. Her mind casts back to his sister-in-law in the kitchen. She had looked elegant and stylish wearing only his oversized shirt. Alessia turns her head so she's no longer taunted by her own image, while Maxim draws down the pale green blind and continues to show her around the room. There's an ensuite here for you, he says gently, pointing to the bathroom door and diverting her from her discouraging thoughts. My own bathroom? Thank you, she says, but the words seem woefully inadequate for the debt she owes him. Hey, he says, standing in front of her, his bright eyes brimming with compassion. I realize that this is all very sudden, Alessia, and we hardly know each other. But I couldn't leave you at the mercy of those men. You have to understand that. He catches a loose strand of hair that's worked its way free from her braid and gently tucks it behind her ear. Don't worry. You're safe here. I'm not going to touch you. Well, not unless you want me to. Alessia catches a trace of his scent, evergreen and sandalwood. She closes her eyes, trying to keep a tight rein on her emotions. This is my family's holiday home, he continues. Think of our time here as a holiday. A place to think, reflect, get to know each other, and get some distance from all the recent dreadful events in your life. A lump forms in Alessia's throat, and she bites her upper lip. Don't cry. Don't cry. Moshai. My room's next door, if you need anything. But right now it's really late, and what we both need is some sleep. He plants a tender kiss on her forehead. Good night. Good night. Her voice is hoarse and almost inaudible. He turns and leaves the room, and she's finally alone, standing in the confines of the most glorious bedroom she has ever been invited to sleep in. She looks from the painting to the bathroom door to the magnificent bed, and slowly she sinks to the floor. Wrapping her arms around herself, she begins to weep.
I hang our coats in the cloakroom, then collect my beer from the kitchen counter and enjoy a long draught. What a day. That first sweet kiss. I groan thinking about it, interrupted by those fucking thugs, and then her sudden disappearance and my mad drive to that godforsaken corner of West London. And her revelation. Sex trafficked. Fuck. That was one hell of a shock. And now we're here, alone. I rub my face, trying to process everything that's happened. I should be tired after the long drive and the trials and tribulations of the day, but instead I'm wired. Glancing up at the ceiling, I pinpoint where Alessia should, I hope, be sleeping peacefully. She's the real reason I'm restless. It took every shred of self-control not to pull her into my arms and what? Even after all she's told me, I can't keep my thoughts above my waist. I'm like a fucking horny schoolboy. Leave the woman alone. But the truth is, I still want her, and don't my blue balls know it. Hell, after all Alessia's been through, she deserves a break. She doesn't need my lascivious attention. She needs a friend. Bugger. What the hell is wrong with me? I grab my beer and drain the bottle, then reach for Alessia's glass. She's hardly touched her drink. I take a swig and run a hand through my hair. I know damn well what's wrong with me. I want her. Badly. I'm infatuated. There. I've admitted it to myself. She's invaded my thoughts and my dreams since I laid eyes on her. I fucking burn for her. But in all my fantasies, she shares my desire. I want her, yes, but I want her wet and willing. I want her to want me too. I know I could seduce her, but right now if she were to say yes, she'd be doing so for all the wrong reasons. Besides, I promised her that I wouldn't touch her unless she wanted me. I close my eyes. When did I acquire a conscience? Deep down, I know the answer. I am hamstrung by our inequality. She has nothing. I have everything. And if I take advantage of her, what would that make me? No better than those fuckers with the Eastern European accents. I've brought her to Cornwall because I want to protect her from them. And now, I have to protect her from myself. Fuck. This is uncharted territory. While I down the remaining beer, I wonder what's happening at the hall. I decide that I can find out tomorrow, and I'll also let Oliver know where I am. I doubt there's anything urgent to deal with, and I'm sure he'll be in touch if there is. I can work down here. I have my phone, though I wish I'd brought my laptop. Right now, I need some sleep. Leaving the empty glass and the beer bottle on the counter, I switch off the lights and head upstairs. I pause outside her bedroom door and listen. Shit. She's crying. I've had my fill of wailing women over the last 4 weeks. Marianne, Caroline, Danny, Jessie. An image of Kit's lifeless body comes to mind, and my own grief rises raw and unexpected. Kit. Fuck. Why? Suddenly, I'm bone tired. I contemplate leaving her to cry, but hesitate outside her door as the sound pierces my mourning heart. I can't leave her sobbing. Sighing, I steel myself, then knock gently on the door and let myself in. She's crumpled on the floor, her head in her hands, right where I left her. Her grief is a reflection of my own. Alessia, oh no, I exclaim and scoop her into my arms. Hush now, I murmur, my voice cracking. I sit down on the bed, cradle her in my lap and bury my face in her hair. Closing my eyes, I inhale her sweet scent and tighten my arms, holding her and rocking gently. I've got you, I whisper past the knot that constricts my throat. I couldn't rescue my brother from the demons that drove him out on his motorbike into an icy night, but I can help this beautiful girl, this beautiful, brave girl. Her sobbing ceases, and she splays her hand over my racing heart and holds it there, I don't know for how long. Finally, she quiets and relaxes against me. She's fallen asleep. In my arms. In the safety of my arms. What a privilege this is. to hold a sleeping beauty. I press a soft kiss in her hair and shift her onto the bed, then cover her with the throw. Her plait snakes across the pillow, and for a moment I consider untying it and freeing her hair, but she mumbles something unintelligible in her own language, and I don't want to wake her. I wonder once more if I haunt her dreams like she haunts mine. "Sleep, beautiful," I whisper, and switch off the light before I step onto the landing. I close her door, anxious that the glare shouldn't wake her, then turn out the hall light and stride into my bedroom, leaving my door ajar, just in case she needs me. I press the electronic closer for the blinds, which descend over the French windows facing the sea. In the walk-in wardrobe, I strip off my clothes and find a pair of pajamas that Danny has brought over from the main house and slip on the bottoms. In London, I rarely wear pajamas, but in Cornwall, with all the staff present, I have no choice. Leaving my clothes in a heap on the floor, I head into the bedroom and climb into bed. I turn off the bedside lamp and stare into the inky darkness. Tomorrow will be a better day. Tomorrow I'll have the lovely Alessia De Marchi to myself. I lie in bed questioning my judgment. I've taken Alessia away from all that she knows. She's destitute, friendless, and totally alone. Well, she has me, and I have to behave myself. "You're going soft in your old age," I mutter, and fall into an exhausted, dreamless sleep. It's the shrill sound of her scream that wakes me. Chapter 12. It takes me a couple of seconds to orient myself, and she screams again. "Fuck! Alessia!" I fly out of bed as adrenaline fuels my body, bringing all my senses to attention. Punching the lights on in the hall, I burst into her room. Alessia is sitting up in her bed. Her head whips around at the sound and light from the hallway, her eyes wild with terror. She opens her mouth to scream again. "Alessia, it's me, Maxim!" Her words rush out in a torrent. "Ndim, Ersir, Shumersir, Shumersir!" "What?" I sit down beside her on the bed, and she launches herself at me, nearly knocking me over and wrapping her arms around my neck. "Hey!" I soothe her once I've regained my balance, and I hold her, stroking her hair. "Ersir, Shumersir, Shumersir," she whispers over and over as she clings to me, trembling like a newborn foal. "English, in English." "The dark," she whispers against my neck. "I hate the dark. It is so dark here." Oh, thank fuck. I'd imagined all manner of horrors and was prepared to fight any number of monsters, but I relax at her words. Keeping one arm around her, I lean over and switch on the bedside light. "That better?" I ask, but she doesn't let go. "It's okay, it's okay. I've got you," I repeat several times. After a few minutes, her trembling ceases and her body relaxes. She sits back and her eyes meet mine. "I am sorry," she whispers. "Hush, don't worry, I'm here." She glances down at my chest, and a slow flush pinks her cheeks. "Yeah, I normally sleep naked. Count yourself lucky I put these on," I quip. Her mouth softens. "I know," she says, and peeks up at me through her long lashes. "You know?" "Yes, you sleep naked." "You've seen me?" "Yes." Her smile is unexpected. "Well, I'm not sure how I feel about that." I'm grateful that she's back from whatever terror she was facing in the dark, but she continues to glance around the room anxiously.
"I am sorry. I did not mean to wake you," she says. "I was frightened."
"Was it a nightmare?" She nods.
"And when I open my eyes, and it is so dark," she shivers. "I did not know if I was dreaming or awake."
I think that would make anyone scream. It's not like London here. There's no light pollution in Trevethick. The dark here is dark.
Yes, like the...
She stops and cringes in revulsion. Like, I whisper. The teasing amusement in her eyes has vanished, replaced by a harrowed, strained expression. Turning her face away, she stares down at her lap. I rub her back when I met with her silence. Tell me, I prompt.
In the, how do you say, camion? Truck, in the truck,
she says, suddenly inspired. I swallow. Truck?
Yes, that brought us to England. It was metal, like a box, and dark, and cold, and the smell.
Her words are barely audible. Fuck, I say under my breath, and fold her in my arms again. She seems a little more reluctant to hug me this time, probably because I'm shirtless, but I'm not going to leave her to face these gruesome nightmares on her own. In one swift movement, I stand, cradling her against my chest. She gasps in surprise. I think you should sleep with me. And without waiting for a response, I carry her into my room, flick on the lights, and deposit her on the floor beside the walk-in wardrobe. Inside, I find the pajama shirt and hand it to her. I point to the ensuite. You can go and change in there. You can't be comfortable sleeping in your jeans and that school sweater. I grimace at her green woolen pullover. She blinks rapidly. Shit. Perhaps I've really overstepped the mark. And suddenly I feel a little self-conscious. Unless, of course, you'd rather sleep alone.
I have never slept with a man,
she whispers. Oh. I won't touch you. This is just sleep. So the next time you scream, I'll be right there. Of course, I'd like to make her scream in a different way. Alessia hesitates, looking from me to the bed, and her lips purse with what I think is resolve.
I want to sleep here, with you,
she whispers, and she marches into the ensuite, not shutting the door until she's found the light switch. Feeling relieved, I stare at the closed bathroom door. At 23, she's never slept with a man. I'm not going to think about that right now. It's after 3 in the morning, and I'm tired.
Alessia gazes at her pale face in the mirror. Wide eyes with dark circles beneath them reflect back at her. Taking a deep breath, she shakes off the remnants of her nightmare. She'd been back in the container, but this time without the other girls. She was alone, in the dark, in the cold, with that smell. She shivers and strips off her clothes. She'd forgotten where she was until he appeared. Mr. Maxim, saving her again. Her own Skanderbeo, Albania's hero. He's making a habit of this. And she's going to sleep with him. He'll keep her nightmares at bay. If her father found out, he would kill her. And her mother... She visualizes her mother fainting at the news that Alessia is sleeping with a man who is not her husband. Don't think about Baba and Mama. Her dear, dear mother had sent Alessia to England thinking she was saving her. She was wrong, so wrong. Oh, Mama. For now, she is safe with Mr. Maxim. She struggles into the PJ top, which is too big. She undoes her braid, shakes out her hair, then tries to tame it with her fingers, but gives up. Gathering her clothes under one arm, she opens the door. Mr. Maxim's room is larger and airier than the other bedroom. It's also off-white, but here the furniture is polished wood, matching the sleigh bed that dominates the room. He is standing on the far side of the bed, and his eyes widen as he studies her.
There you are, he says, his voice husky. I was wondering if I should send a search party.
Her gaze drifts from his startling green eyes to the tattoo on his arm. She has only glimpsed parts of it before, but even from across the room she can see the design. A two-headed eagle. Albania.
What?
He follows her stare and looks down at his tattoo.
Oh, this, he says. It's a folly of youth. He sounds a little embarrassed, and he frowns, seemingly puzzled by her keen interest. She can't take her eyes off the ink as she walks toward him. He raises his elbow so she can have a better look. Inscribed across his bicep is a black shield bearing the image of an ivory two-headed eagle hovering over five yellow circles that are in the shape of an inverted V. Alessia places her clothes on the footstool at the end of the bed and raises her hand to touch his arm, glancing at Maxim for permission.
I hold my breath as she traces the outline of my tattoo, her finger skirting across my skin, her light touch echoing through my body toward my groin, and I suppress a groan. This is the symbol for my country, she whispers. The two-headed eagle is on the Albanian flag. What are the odds? I grit my teeth. I'm not sure how long I can bear her touch without reciprocating. But not these yellow circles, she adds. They're called bezants. I sound really hoarse. Bezant? Yes, it represents a coin. In Albanian, we have the same word. Why do you have this tattoo? What does it mean? Alluring eyes peer up at me. What can I say? This is the shield from my family's coat of arms? I don't want to explain my family's heraldry at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the truth is, I had the tattoo done to piss off my mother. She hates them. But of the family coat of arms, how could she complain? Like I said, a youthful folly. My eyes stray from her eyes to her lips. I swallow. It's too late to discuss this now. Let's sleep. I toss back the quilt on the bed and step aside so that she can climb in. She obliges, revealing long, slender legs beneath the pajama shirt that is way too big for her. This is torture. What is this word, folly? She asks as I walk around the bed. She's propped herself up on her elbow, and her glorious dark hair falls in a riot of loose waves over her shoulders, past the contour of her breasts and onto the bedding. She looks gorgeous, and I'm going to have to keep my hands off her. Folly, in this case, means a foolish action, I say as I join her in bed. I almost snort at the irony of my word definition. If sleeping next to this beautiful girl isn't folly, I don't know what is. Folly, she whispers, as she lays her head on the pillow. I dim the bedside light so it glows in the darkness, but I don't switch it off, just in case she wakes again. Yes, folly. I lie down and close my eyes. Go to sleep. Good night, she whispers, her voice soft and sweet. And thank you. I groan. This is going to be torture. I turn on my side, away from her, and start counting sheep. I'm lying on the lawn near the towering stone wall that surrounds the kitchen garden at Tressilian Hall. The summer sun warms my skin. The scent from the lavender that rings the lawn and the sweet fragrance of the roses that climb the wall waft over me. I'm warm. I'm happy. I'm home. A girlish laugh catches my attention. I turn my head, drawn to the sound, but I'm blinded by the sun and can see her only in outline. Her long raven hair blows in the breeze, and she's swathed in a translucent blue housecoat. It billows out around her slim, silhouetted figure. Alessia. The scent of the flowers intensifies, and I close my eyes to inhale their sweet, intoxicating perfume. When I open them, she's gone. I wake with a start. Morning is bleeding through the cracks between the blinds. Alessia has trespassed onto my side of the bed, and she's nestled under my arm, her hand balled in a fist on my abdomen, her head on my chest, her leg intertwined with mine. She is all over me. And fast asleep. And my cock is wide awake and rock hard. Oh, God! I whisper and brush my nose against her hair. Lavender and roses. Intoxicating. My heart rate flips into overdrive as I make a mental list of all the possibilities this scenario presents. Alessia in my arms. Ready. Waiting. She is so tantalizing, so close. Too close. If I roll over, she'll be on her back, and I can finally bury myself in her. I stare up at the ceiling, praying for self-control. I know if I move, she'll wake, so I torture myself some more and lie still, enjoying the sweet, sweet agony of having her sprawled all over me. I gather a lock of her hair between my fingers, surprised by how soft and silky it feels. She stirs, her fisted hand flexes, and her fingers splay out on my belly, tickling the beginning of my pubic hair. Fuck! I'm so hard, and want nothing more than to grab her hand and wrap it around my erection. I'll probably explode if I do.
Mmm,
she murmurs. Her eyelids flicker open, and she looks dreamily up at me. Good morning, Alessia. I'm breathless. She gasps and scrambles to put some space between us. I was enjoying your visit to my side of the bed, I tease. She pulls the covers up to her chin, her cheeks rosy, her smile shy.
Good morning, she says.
Sleep well? I ask as I roll onto my side to face her.
Yes, thank you.
Hungry? I know I am, and not for food. She nods. Do you really mean yes? She frowns. You said in the car yesterday that in Albania it's the opposite.
You remembered?
She sounds pleased and surprised. I remember everything you say. I want to tell her that she looks very lovely this morning, but I refrain. I'm behaving.
I like sleeping with you,
she says, confounding me. Well, that makes two of us. I did not have bad dreams.
Good.
Me neither. She laughs, and I try to recall the dream that woke me. All I know is that she was part of it, as usual. I dreamt about you.
Me?
Yes.
Are you sure it was not a nightmare?
She teases. I grin. Quite sure. She smiles. She has a bewitching smile. Perfect white teeth. Pink lips that are parted, possibly an invitation. You look very desirable. The words come out of my mouth in an unguarded moment. Her deep brown eyes dilate, captivating me.
Desirable?
Her breath catches.
Yes.
The silence stretches between us as we gaze at each other.
I don't know what to do, she whispers.
I close my eyes and swallow while her words from last night echo in my head.
I have never slept with a man.
You're a virgin, I whisper, and open my eyes to study her face. She blushes.
Yes.
Her simple affirmation is like an ice bath to my libido. I've only slept with one virgin, and that was Caroline. It was my first time too, and it was a disaster that nearly got us expelled from school. After that, my father took me to a high-class brothel in Bloomsbury. If you're going to start fucking girls, Maxim, you'd better learn how to fuck. I was 15, and Caroline moved on. Until Kit's death. Bloody hell. Alessia's a virgin at 23. Of course she is. What did I expect? She's different from every woman I've ever known. And she's looking at me all big eyes and expectation. I wonder again at the folly of bringing her here. Alessia frowns, anxiety etched on her face. Shit. Reaching forward, I brush my thumb against her pouty bottom lip. She inhales sharply. I want you, Alessia, very much. But I want you to want me too. I think we need to get to know each other before we take whatever this is any further. There. That was the grown-up response, yes?
Okay,
she whispers, but she looks uncertain, and possibly a little disappointed. What does she expect of me? And I know I need to put some distance between us to think about this. Here in my bed, she's a distraction. A pouting, soft-lipped, and beautiful distraction. I sit up and cup her face in my hands. Let's just enjoy this holiday, I murmur, and kiss her and clamber out of bed. Now is not the time. It's not fair to her, and it's not fair to me.
Are you leaving?
Alessia asks as she sits up in bed. Her hair tumbles down around her small frame like a veil. Her eyes are round with concern. She looks effortlessly sexy, swamped in my pajama shirt. I'm going to grab a shower, then cook us breakfast.
You can cook?
I laugh at her shock. Yeah, well, I can cook bacon and eggs. I give her a sheepish smile and stride into the bathroom. Bugger. More self-abuse in the shower. Water streams over my body, and with one hand spread on the marble tiles supporting me, I come quickly, thinking of her hand on my stomach and her hand wrapped around my dick. A virgin. I frown. Why am I making such a big deal of this? At least she hasn't been brutalized by those fuckers. Anger flares in my gut as I think of the men coming after her. She's safe here in Cornwall, so that's something. Perhaps she's religious. She did say her grandmother was a missionary, and she wears a gold cross around her neck. Or maybe premarital sex is a taboo in Albania. I have no idea. I wash my hair and my body with the soap Danny left for me. This is not what I had in mind when I brought her down here. Her inexperience is an issue. I like sexually adventurous women who know what they're doing, know what they want, and know their limits. Breaking in a virgin is a big responsibility. I towel dry my hair. It's a tough job, but someone has to do it. Might as well be me. I stare at the cad in the mirror. Dude, grow up. Maybe she wants a long-term relationship. I've had two relationships, but neither of them for longer than 8 months, so not that long. Charlotte was socially ambitious and she moved on to a baronet from Essex. Arabella was too into drugs for my liking. I mean, who doesn't like a bump now and then, but every day? No way. I think she's in rehab again. A relationship with Alessia? What would that entail? I am getting way ahead of myself here. Wrapping a towel around my waist, I head back into the bedroom. She's gone. Fuck! My heart rate doubles. Has she fled? Again? I knock on the door of her room. No reply. I enter, and I'm relieved to hear the shower. For fuck's sake. Get a grip. I leave her and go to get dressed.
Alessia doesn't think she'll ever leave this shower. At home, in Kukis, the bathroom had a rudimentary shower, and the floor had to be mopped after each use. At Magda's, the shower was over the bath. This shower has its own enclosed space, and the hot water cascades over her from the biggest showerhead she's ever seen, even bigger than the one in Mr. Maxim's bathroom at his apartment. It's blissful, and like nothing she's experienced before. She washes her hair and carefully shaves her body with the disposable razor Magda gave her. She scrubs herself with the body wash she's brought from home. Her soapy hand moves over her breasts, and she closes her eyes. I want you, Alessia, very much. He wants her. Her hand moves down, and in her mind it's his hand on her body, touching her, intimately. She wants him, too. She recalls waking up in his arms and feeling the warmth and strength of his body against her skin. Her belly flutters at the memory as her hand moves, faster, faster, and faster. She leans against the warmed tiles and raises her head, her mouth open as she gulps in air. Maxim, Maxim, ah, her muscles clench deep inside as she comes. Catching her breath, she opens her eyes. This is what she wants, isn't it? Can she trust him? Yes. He's done nothing to shake the trust she's placed in him. Last night he rescued her from her night terrors. He was kind and gentle. He let her sleep with him to keep her nightmares away. She feels safe with him. She hasn't felt safe for so long. It's a novel feeling, even though she knows that Dante and Illy are still out there somewhere looking for her. No, do not think about them. She wishes she knew more about men. Men and women in Cucas don't interact like they do in England. At home, men socialize with men, women with women. It has always been this way. Not having brothers and kept separate from her male cousins in social situations, her experience was limited to the few male students she met at university. And her father, of course. She runs her hands through her hair. Mr. Maxim is not like any man she's ever known. With the water pouring onto her face, she resolves to put all her problems out of her mind. Today, as Maxim says, it's a holiday. Her first. Wrapping her hair in a towel and her body in a bath sheet, she pads into the bedroom. A pounding beat is coming from downstairs. She listens. The music seems at odds with what she knows about him. His compositions suggest a quieter, more introspective man than the one blasting this loud music through the house. She lays out her clothes on the bed. All of them, with the exception of her jeans and bra, had been given to her by Magda and Mikhail. She frowns, wishing she had something more attractive to wear. She slips on an off-white, long-sleeve t-shirt to wear over her jeans. It's a little shapeless, but it will have to do. It's all she has. Towel drying, then brushing out her hair, she leaves it loose and heads downstairs. Through the glass wall surrounding the staircase, she watches Maxim in the kitchen. He's wearing a pale gray sweater and the ripped black jeans, and has a tea towel draped over his shoulder while he stands at the stove. He's frying bacon. The aroma is delicious. And he's shuffling to the beat of the dance music that is thumping through the room. Alessia cannot help but grin. While cleaning his apartment, she had never seen any evidence that he could cook. Men, where she is from, don't cook. Or dance while cooking. The flex of his broad shoulders, the swivel of his slim hips, and his bare feet tapping in perfect time to the music are mesmerizing. She feels a delicious tightening in her belly. He rakes his fingers through his damp hair and then flips the bacon. Her mouth waters. The smell. The sight of him. He turns suddenly, and his face lights up when he sees her on the stairs. His enormous smile mirrors hers. One egg or two, he shouts above the music. One. She mouths as she comes down the stairs and into the big room. She turns and gasps as she looks out through the floor-to-ceiling windows. The sea! Detti, Detti, the sea! She shouts, sprinting to the glass wall of doors that lead onto the balcony.
I lower the heat under the bacon and hurry to the balcony doors to join Alessia, who's jumping from foot to foot, incandescent with excitement.
Can we go down to the sea?
Her eyes are alive with delight as she bounces up and down like a child.
Of course.
Here. I unlock the balcony door and slide it open so that she can go outside. A gust of glacial air catches us both by surprise. It's freezing, but she rushes out, not caring about her wet hair, bare feet, or thin t-shirt. Doesn't this woman have any decent clothes? I pick up a grey throw that's draped over the back of the sofa and walk out after her. I wrap my arms and the blanket around her, holding her as she admires the view. Her face is lit up with wonder. The hideout and our three other holiday homes are built along a rocky promontory. A small winding path at the end of the garden leads down to the beach. It's a bright, clear day. The sun is shining, but it's bitterly cold in the howling wind. The sea is a chilly blue, flecked with white surf, and we hear the boom of the waves as they crash against the cliffs on each side of the cove. The air smells fresh and salty. Alessia turns to me, her expression one of complete awe. Come on, let's eat. I'm conscious that breakfast is on the stove. You'll catch your death out here. We'll go down to the beach after breakfast. We head back inside and close the door. I just have to do the eggs, I shout above the music. Let me help! Alessia shouts back, following me into the kitchen area, still draped in the blanket. I turn the Sonos volume down via the app on my phone. That's better. Interesting music, Alessia says, in a tone that tells me that perhaps it's not her thing. It's Korean house. I use a few tracks when I DJ. I retrieve the eggs from the fridge.
Two eggs? No, one.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay, just one. I'm having two. You can make some toast. Bread is in the fridge and the toaster is over there. Together we work in the kitchen, and I'm able to watch her. Using her long, nimble fingers, she fishes the toast out of the toaster and butters each slice. Here. I take the two plates out of the warming drawer and place them on the counter, ready for toast. She grins as I serve up the rest of our breakfast. I don't know about you, but I'm famished. I abandon the frying pan in the sink, collect both plates, and usher her toward the dining table, where I've laid two places. Alessia looks impressed. Why does this make me feel like I've finally achieved something? Sit here. You can enjoy the view.
How was that? Maxim asks. They are seated at the large dining table, Alessia at the head, where she's never sat before, and she's enjoying the view, the seascape. Delicious. You are a man with many accomplishments. You'd be amazed, he says dryly, his voice a little husky, and for some reason his tone and the way he looks at her make her breath catch. Do you still want to go for a walk? Yes. Okay. Taking his phone, he dials a number. Alessia wonders who he's calling. Danny, he says. No, we're fine. Can you bring a hairdryer over? Oh, there are. Okay. Then I need a pair of Wellingtons or walking boots. He looks directly at Alessia. What size? He asks. She has no idea what he's talking about. Shoe size, he clarifies. 38. That's, size 5, and some socks, if you have any. Yes, for a woman. It doesn't matter. And a decent bloody warm coat. Yes, for a woman. Slim, small, as soon as possible. He listens for a moment. Fantastic, he says, and hangs up. I have a coat. You won't be warm enough. And I don't know about the Albanian sock thing, but it's cold out there. She flushes. She has only two pairs of socks because she can't afford more, and she couldn't ask Magda for another pair. Magda had done enough for her. Dante and Ely had confiscated her luggage, and when she'd arrived in Brentford, Magda had burned most of the clothes she'd been wearing. They were no longer fit to be worn. Who is Danny? She lives not far from here, Maxim says, directing his attention to the empty plates as he stands to clear the table. Let me, she says, shocked that he's clearing up. I will wash them too. She takes the plates from him and places them in the sink. No, I'll do this. There should be a hairdryer in the chest of drawers in the wardrobe in your room. Go dry your hair. But surely he's not going to wash up. No man does that. No buts. I'll do it. You've cleaned up after me often enough. But it is my job. Today it isn't. You're my guest. Go. His tone is clipped, stern. A frisson of apprehension runs up her spine. Please, he adds. Okay, she whispers and hurries out of the kitchen, confused and wondering if he's angry with her. Please don't be angry. Alessia, he calls. She stops at the foot of the stairs and studies her feet. Are you okay? She nods before she dashes up the stairs.
What the fuck? What did I say? I watch her retreating figure, noting that she deliberately avoids eye contact with me. Shit. I've upset her, but I don't know how or why. I'm tempted to go after her, but decide against it and begin to load the dishwasher and clean up. 20 minutes later, as I'm putting away the frying pan, the entry phone rings. Danny. I glance up at the stairs, hoping that Alessia will appear, but she doesn't. I press the buzzer to let Danny in and turn off the music, knowing she will not approve.
The hairdryer's high-pitched wheeze rings in her ears as Alessia brushes and brushes her hair beneath its heat. With each stroke, her heartbeat settles to a more even pace. He had sounded like her father. And she'd reacted the way she'd always reacted to her father, by getting out of his way. Baba has never forgiven her or her mother that his only child is a girl. Though it's her poor mother who bears the brunt of his anger. But Mr. Maxim is nothing like her father. Nothing. She finishes her hair and knows that the only way to restore her equilibrium and forget about her family for a while is to play the piano. Music is her escape. It's been her only escape. When she comes back downstairs, Mr. Maxim has disappeared. She wonders where, but her fingers are itching to play. She sits down at the little white upright, lifts the lid, and with no preamble, launches into her angry Bach prelude in C minor. The music blazes through the room in hues of brilliant orange and red, burning away any thoughts of her father and setting her free. When she opens her eyes, Maxim is watching her.
That was incredible, he whispers.
Thank you, she says. He takes a step closer and strokes her cheek with the back of his finger, then tilts her chin up so she's lost in his magnetic gaze. His eyes are the most spectacular color. Up close, she notices that the irises are a darker green around the edge, the color of a cuckoo's fur, while toward the dilating pupil they're lighter, like a fern in the spring. When he leans down, she thinks he's going to kiss her, but he doesn't.
I don't know what I did to upset you, he says.
She puts her fingers over his mouth, silencing him.
You did nothing wrong, she whispers.
His lips purse into a kiss against her fingertips, and she removes her hand.
Well, if I did, I'm sorry. Now, do you want to go for a walk on the beach?
She beams at him.
Yes.
Okay, you need to wrap up warm.
Alessia is impatient. She practically pulls me down the stony path. At the bottom, we step onto the beach, and Alessia can contain herself no more. She releases my hand and runs toward the raging sea, her hat flying off and her hair whipping in the wind. The sea! The sea! She cries and twirls around, her arms in the air. Her earlier peak is forgotten. Her smile is wide and her face bright, lit from within by her joy. I stride across the coarse sand and rescue her discarded woolly hat. The sea! She shouts again above the roar of the water, and she gesticulates wildly, her arms like a crazy windmill, welcoming each wave as it crashes to the shore. It's impossible not to smile. Her unbridled enthusiasm for this first-time event is too appealing and too affecting. I grin as she squeals and dances back to avoid the breakers on the shoreline. She looks ridiculous. Dressed in oversized Wellingtons and an oversized coat. Her face is flushed, her nose pink, and she is utterly breathtaking. My heart clenches. She runs toward me with childish abandon and grabs my hand. The sea! She cries once more and drags me to the crashing waves. And I go willingly, surrendering myself to her joy.
Chapter 13. They walk hand in hand along the coastal path and stop by an old ruin. What is this place? Alessia asks.
It's an abandoned tin mine. Alessia and Maxim lean against the chimney stack, staring out at a choppy sea that's crested with white surf as the chill wind whistles between them. "It is so beautiful here," she says. "It is wild. It reminds me of my home. Except I'm happier here. I feel safe. That's because I am with Mr. Maxim."
"I love this place too. It's where I grew up."
"In the house where we are staying?"
He looks away. "No, my brother built that quite recently."
Maxim's mouth turns down and he seems lost.
"You have a brother?"
"I did," he whispers. "He died." He digs his hands deep into his coat pockets and stares out at the sea, his face bleak, carved like stone.
"I am sorry," she says, and from his pained, raw expression, she suspects that his brother's death is a recent event.
Reaching out, she places a hand on his arm.
"You miss him," she says.
"Yes," Maxim whispers, turning his face toward her.
"I do. I loved him."
She is surprised by his candor.
"Do you have other family?"
"A sister, Marianne." His fond smile is brief.
"And then there's my mother."
His tone becomes dismissive.
"Your father?"
"My father died when I was 16.
"Oh, I am sorry. Your sister and mother, do they live here?"
"They used to. They visit sometimes," he says. "Marianne works and lives in London. She's a doctor." He flashes her a proud smile.
"Wow."
Alessia is impressed.
"And your mother?"
"She's mostly in New York." His answer is curt. He doesn't want to discuss his mother. And she doesn't want to discuss her father.
"There are mines near Cucas," she says to change the subject, and she gazes up at the gray stone chimney stack. It's like the chimney on the road to Kosovo.
"Really?"
"Yes."
"What do they mine?"
"Chroma. I don't know the word."
"Chromium?"
She shrugs. "I don't know the English."
"I think I'd better invest in an English-Albanian dictionary," Maxim mutters. "Come on, let's walk into the village. We can have lunch."
"Village?"
Alessia has seen no sign of any dwellings on their walk.
"Trevethic. It's a small village just over the hill. Popular with tourists."
Alessia falls into step beside him.
"The photographs in your apartment, are they from here?" she asks.
"The landscapes, yes. Yes, they are." Maxim beams. "You're observant," he adds. And from his raised brows, Alessia can tell he's impressed. She gives him a shy smile, and he takes her gloved hand. They emerge from the path onto a lane, too narrow to have sidewalks. The hedgerows on either side are high, but cut back from the road. The brambles and bare-twigged bushes are orderly and trimmed, and here and there they are covered in clumps of snow. They walk down and around a sweeping corner, and the village of Trevethic appears at the bottom of the lane. The stone and whitewashed houses are like nothing Alessia has seen before. They look small and old, but charming nonetheless. The place is quaint, pristine, with no trash anywhere. Where she comes from, there is garbage and construction debris in the streets, and most of the buildings are built from concrete. At the waterfront, two stone quays stretch out to embrace the harbor where three large fishing boats are moored. Around the waterfront are a few shops, a couple of boutiques, a convenience store, a small art gallery, and two pubs. One called the Watering Hole, the other the Two-Headed Eagle. A sign hangs outside, bearing a shield Alessia recognizes.
"Look," she points at the emblem, "your tattoo."
Maxim winks at her.
"You hungry?"
"Yes," she replies. "That was a long walk."
"Good day, my lord,"
An elderly man in a black scarf, a green waxed coat, and a flat cap is leaving the Two-Headed Eagle. He is followed by a shaggy dog of indeterminate breed, wearing a red coat with the name Boris embroidered in gold across the back. "Father Truin," Maxim shakes his hand.
"How are you bearing up, young man?"
He pats Maxim on the arm.
"Good, thank you."
"I'm pleased to hear it. And who is this fine young lady?"
"Father Truin, our vicar, may I introduce Alessia de Marchi, my friend, visiting from overseas."
"Good afternoon, my dear."
Truin holds out his hand.
"Good afternoon," she says, shaking his hand, surprised and pleased that he would address her directly.
"And how are you enjoying Cornwall?"
"It is lovely here."
Truin gives her a benign smile and turns to Maxim.
"I suppose it's too much to hope that we'll see you at Sunday service tomorrow."
"We'll see, Father."
"We lead by example, my son. Remember that."
"I know, I know." Maxim sounds resigned.
"Brisk day,"
Father Truin exclaims, moving on from that subject.
"Indeed."
Truin whistles to Boris, who has sat patiently waiting for their pleasantries to cease.
"In case you've forgotten, service starts at 10 sharp."
He gives them both a nod and heads on up the lane.
"Vicar is the priest, yes?"
Alessia asks as Maxim opens the door to the pub and ushers her into the warmth.
"Yes. Are you religious?" he asks, surprising her.
"Good afternoon, my lord,"
says a large man with red hair and a complexion to match, interrupting their conversation. He stands behind an impressive bar that is hung with decorative jugs and pint glasses. There's a burning log fire at one end of the pub, and several wooden high-backed benches on either side of a line of tables, most of which are occupied by men and women who could be locals or tourists. Alessia doesn't know. From the ceiling hang fishermen's ropes, nets, and tackle. The atmosphere is warm and friendly. There's even a young couple kissing at the back. Embarrassed, Alessia looks away and sticks close to Mr. Maxim.
"Hi, Jago," I say to the barman. "A table for two, for lunch. Megan will sort you out." Jago points to the far corner. "Megan? Shit. Yeah, she's working here now. Fuck." I give Alessia a sideways glance and she looks puzzled. "Are you sure you're hungry?" "Yes," Alessia replies. "Doombar?" Jago asks, staring with overt appreciation at Alessia. "Yes, please." I try not to glare at him. "And for the lady?" Jago's voice softens, his eyes still on Alessia. "What would you like to drink?" I ask. She peels off her hat, releasing her hair. Her cheeks are flushed from the cold. "The beer I had yesterday?" she says. With her loose, dark curls falling almost to her waist, her shining eyes and her radiant smile, she is an exotic beauty. I'm beguiled. Totally and utterly beguiled. I can't blame Jago for staring. "Half a pale ale for the lady," I say without looking at him. "What is it?" Alessia asks as she begins to unzip Marianne's quilted barber jacket, and I know I've been gawking at her. I shake my head and she gives me a shy smile. "Hello, Maxim. Or should I say milord now?" Shit. I turn around and Megan is standing in front of me, her expression as dark as her clothes. "Table for two?" she says, with a saccharine tone and a smile to match. "Please. And how are you?" "Fine," she snaps, and my heart sinks, my father's voice ringing in my head. "Don't fuck the local girls, boy." I stand aside for Alessia to precede me, and we follow in Megan's dour wake. She leads us to a table in the corner by a window that overlooks the quays. It's the best table in the establishment, so that's something. "Is this okay for you?" I ask Alessia, deliberately ignoring Megan. "Yes, It is good, Alessia responds with a confused look at a moody Megan.